let's start with where you were born.
Okay, I was born in Wimbledon, South London. I think St. Teresa's Hospital. Yeah.
And what's your parents' background?
My dad came here in 1957. My mum joined him in 1960. They got married in Battersea, actually, at, I can't remember the name, in Altenborough Gardens in Battersea, St. Vincent de Paul Church. They lived in one room in Battersea. After my older brother was born and after I was born, my dad bought his first house because he wanted us all to be together. He bought it with his younger brother, and then they went on to buy another, I think, 6 or 7 houses together, and they were landlords. So a lot of Nigerians would come in and they would stay in one of our houses or upstairs in our main house.
So I'm just wondering, we're basically having this interview because I know that you've been working with members of the Windrush generation and the wider Commonwealth. And I saw an article in one of the newspapers saying that you were the secretary of the Ebe Union.
Yes.
Could you tell me a little bit about that?
Ebe Union was formed by my dad and some other people from a town. There's a town in Enugu State called Ebe in Udi local government area. So they formed this association when they started coming in the 50s and 60s. We used to have get-togethers, like 3-day Christmas parties, and usually in our house, in my parents' house. That all kind of faded out when a lot of people started going back to Nigeria, but it was started up again, I think, about 20 years ago, and I was a secretary until, I think, last year. And then we had elections, and I also won the younger people to take over, because I've been doing it for years and years, so, yeah.
So that's interesting. What was the main purpose of the organisation?
It's to support solidarity. Plus, we do projects in Ebe, like we put electricity in a primary school. We provided school uniforms, shoes and socks to the primary school children. So that was my last trip to Nigeria, where I had to go to the market, buy all the fabrics for the primary schools, buy the socks, buy the sandals. It was just crazy. Then find tailors to sew them, and it was just hectic. Yeah, so we tried to, it's about development in Nigeria, and also we go to the seaside here, go on trips. We have meetings every 2 months where people host in their houses. So it's just to support each other and support people in Nigeria as well, in Ebe.
Does the organisation provide any financial support? I was just wondering if it's a bit like, you know, how they have the partner type of system or...
No, not really. But we all pay dues and levies towards development projects in Nigeria.
And what if, you know, in instances where somebody might have a problem here in the UK, is that something that they could go via the organisation to get support and help?
Only to notify people, then we can find help if they need a lawyer, or sometimes people come here, they haven't got anywhere to stay. They might find a way to London. So in that case, somebody would help them or help them get a job, you know, that kind of thing.
Does the organisation have any sort of connections and associations with other organisations from Nigeria?
Yes, the neighbouring towns. They had a big Igbo festival a few months ago, so all the Igbo organisations, they all met up and had a day out and all dressed up and the traditional dances. But we're thinking about joining KANUK. KANUK is a central association for Nigerians in the UK. It's a massive umbrella organisation, so we're thinking of joining them.
Can you just spell the acronym again?
CANUK, KANUK. It's a central association for Nigerians in the UK.
And I was interested in what you said about many of the members returned back to Nigeria in the 70s.
They did, yeah.
Do you know the reasons why people decided to return?
I think because there was a civil war between 67 and 70, and we were the side that were called the Biafrans, and people returned either to repair the damage done in our, you know, our ancestral homelands, or to visit relatives. And a lot of them, they had aging parents. Like when my uncle, my dad's junior brother, went back because my grandfather had had a stroke, and he eventually died in 74. But then that's how he got stuck out in Nigeria. You know, couldn't, he came back a few times on short trips, but couldn't come back to resettle. So it happened to quite a few of them, about six or seven of them.
So can you explain that in more detail? When you say your uncle, so your uncle came over here
In 61.
Yeah. And then he didn't return until when?
He went back to Nigeria in the 70s, and then he was coming and going. But I think at one point he didn't come back for quite a while, and then when he tried to come back, he couldn't. So there were quite a few people like him, and they were Nigerian Windrush victims. And then when we were trying to help him get back, we couldn't. And in the end, he never got any of his pensions because he worked for British Rail and the post office, and he couldn't actually physically get back. And this went on for years and years until he died in 2003, yeah.
So when he went for an extended period, was it because he had gone for longer than the 2 year?
It must be.
I think they had a two year rule.
Yeah. But nobody was told about the 2 year rule, or there was such a thing as a returning resident visa. Every time he went to the High Commission, they just said, well, no, you don't have right of abode, and your ILR has expired or lapsed, and that was it. And then the women were usually given visas because they thought they would return to Nigeria, but the men weren't, so...
When you say the women, do you mean that in terms of the experiences you have within your direct community?
Yeah, like my uncle's wife.
Yeah.
My auntie, she got a visa. Most of the women were given visas, even if it's visitors' visas, like my friend, because they felt they're more likely to go back to Nigeria, but the men, they thought, would not, even though they had a right to actually stay. Yeah.
So, in terms of your uncle, so he would have accrued, I mean, he would have contributed to National Insurance. Did he ever speak to other members of the family, including yourself, about the challenges he was facing?
All the time. I mean, when I used to visit Nigeria and, I was staying in his house, he did. He kept on trying to apply to come back. When his daughter was getting married in Birmingham, he applied to come back, and it was no. So my dad had to walk her down the aisle. It was just so heartbreaking. It's just awful. Yeah.
So he couldn't even get in... He couldn't get in on a returning...
We didn't even know that existed, but every time we made inquiries, or he made inquiries, they didn't even say that was an option. So he kept on applying for visitors' visas and kept on being refused.
So he was going to the British Embassy in Nigeria, presumably, and then they were just saying they couldn't help him.
Exactly, yeah. So, he missed the huge milestones in his children's lives, really, and... You know, and then eventually, when he became ill and we tried to bring him over here, and when I was trying to sort out his pension, in the end we had to fly him to Italy for medical treatment. And then my poor dad had to fly out to Italy. He was quite elderly by then. And then he flew back to Nigeria, and then eventually he died out there, 2003, without ever coming back here.
So, your father did?
No, my uncle.
Oh, your uncle.
Uncle. His brother.
Right.
My dad registered in the 80s, I think, as a British citizen, yeah. During the registration period, anyway.
So, presumably because you were born here, you didn't have any issues.
No.
Your siblings didn't
all
have any.
Born here.
Yeah, no, all born didn't. Here. But do you remember, I think you said you were born in 62.
Yeah.
Do you remember your parents ever talking about the need to register? You said your father registered.
One time when my mum was coming back from Nigeria, and I think the immigration officer, he said to her, you need to register, otherwise next time we might not let you in. Like, okay. She came on a British passport, and I said to my dad, it's a UKC passport. So she went and registered, yeah. Because somehow she missed all the publicity, or I don't know. But yeah. So after that, I think as many people registered, but the people that were already in Nigeria, they didn't get the opportunity to register.
And just going back to your uncle for a moment, did he, so he had this pension that he should have been able to get access to, and yet The embassy, nobody gave him advice, nobody told him how to get that money?
Well, I made inquiries, and they said that he has to be physically in the United Kingdom to claim it, to do the paperwork. And I said, well, he can't get a visa, and that's how it ended. Not just him, I mean, there was about three people I can think of. One of them worked down the mines, Newcastle under Lyme, and he never got his pension. So none of them did, actually, no.
Are they all Nigerian? They were all Nigerian?
All from the same town.
Oh, all from the same.
Yeah, all from the same town. But the story is replicated in other towns. Mm. I talked to somebody in church last week. His uncle is in his 80s, hasn't got his pension. He's trying to get back. And there's quite a few people like that. So it's ridiculous, really. Yeah. So that's another mini scandal in itself. The pension. It's like the stolen pension scandal. I think they should have their pensions up to the time that they died. So my uncle, from 1997, he should have got his pension until 2003. That's 6 years of pension that he never got. So I don't know whether his wife can get it, but I'm looking into that. But I'm not making any headway, actually. With a DWP, not getting anywhere at all. So, I don't know. I think my auntie's trying to chase it up as well, but the subject access requests were just not getting anywhere at all.
And presumably they won't talk to you about an individual's pension.
What, the DWP?
Yeah.
I think my aunt, through Citizens Advice, she did a subject access request. And after that, I'm not sure what the process is. No one seems to know, like, if somebody's died, whether you're entitled to get the pension up to the time he's died. It's a mystery to everybody, including the government, so... Okay. Yeah.
And I just still interested in what you were saying about your uncle, because mm-hmm. you're saying that he wasn't able to then attend his daughter's wedding. So were his children... all of his children here, and that while he remained in Nigeria, mostly?
At the time of the wedding, they were all back. They went back briefly, then they all came back.
Okay.
One of them, the one that was not born here, she was a Windrush victim and she had problems. But she's now got a British passport. Under the Windrush scheme, she's got a British passport, yeah.
And did that go quite smoothly? What?
Yes. Not, well... In 2018, I went to Nigeria when I heard about the Windrush scandal, and I told her she was a Windrush victim and all the other people I knew. So because she happened to have a visitor's visa, because her daughter's here and her grandchildren, so she flew here to do her application. But all the other people that applied in Nigeria, they were all refused, and she was successful because she was actually here, and then she's got a British passport now. So
the people that are applying from Nigeria, what's the process they have to go through when they're applying? Where do they go to apply?
There's a form for overseas applicants they do online. Then they have to go to some kind of processing centre for their biometrics. It's not the High Commission, I think it's VAC, some kind of centre anyway, or TFS, for the biometrics. Then they go home. I think all the paperwork is sent here, and then after that they get a decision, which is usually negative.
I was at one of the, you know, they had the Home Office were doing those Zooms telling people mm-hmm. About the scheme and encouraging them to, apply to them. And somebody brought up the issue of Nigerians having to send in their physical passports and then seemingly... maybe they go missing or something like that. And I was wondering if you'd heard about...
Not so much that they go missing. I've heard of some cases where they hold on to them. I'm not really sure why, for ages and ages, until people kick up a huge fuss here, then they get them back. I'm not sure why they do that. But I wouldn't advise anyone to hand in the original anyway. I've got my uncle's original, yeah. And... yeah.
So... when did you first become aware that people of Nigerian heritage were actually having problems with their citizenship status? Was it literally because of your uncle, or...?
That was one of the reasons, and all the other people from that particular town. That was early 80s, probably, yeah.
And then, I guess from the early 80s, you may have just thought it was an individual, kind of individual issue rather than a much wider issue. And so when did you realise, no, this is like a big thing?
I've been hearing rumours about this two-year thing, that if you're away for more than 2 years, you can't get back in. Just been hearing. And, you know, even at school, I think some of the Caribbeans, they wouldn't go on school trips or anything because they'd heard things like if they went, they wouldn't get back in. And, yeah, so I've been hearing things growing up. But I didn't know it was a widespread thing across the entire Commonwealth.
So, did you... You said you went to Nigeria in 2018. Mm. Was it literally then when it started being reported in the media?
Yes, when I heard about the Windrush scandal. I thought, oh, these people are all Windrush victims. Yeah. Then I went to Nigeria and I had a meeting with them. And then that's I just started the ball rolling. But before that, April 2018, I'd called the Home Office. I'd given the details of all these people. And they said they are Windrush victims, including my deceased uncle. So that was, yeah, April 2018, I got all the notes that I made. So then after...
So that was literally... Was that just before the scandal broke?
No,
or
since
after?
I heard it
as
on television.
As soon as you heard.
Yeah,
oh, I see.
Since I heard it. David Lammy and all the rest of it. As soon as I heard it. And when the Caribbean heads of government, when they went to see Theresa May, as soon as I heard that, yep, I was on the phone to the Home Office. It's like, literally, all these people are Windrush victims. And they said, yeah, they are. So, yeah.
And so all the people that you mentioned to them, have they had their situations resolved now?
My cousin, because she flew here. All the other ones that applied from Nigeria, no, they refused them. I've gone through the review process of one of them. They refused that as well. And there's no appeals process, so...
So there's no appeals process, and meanwhile, when they make the application, what kind of documentation are they asking them to share with them?
Passports showing that they were here, school records maybe, just evidence that they were here before 1973. And also, we've got this ridiculous situation where people are saying, well, I made inquiries at the British High Commission, and they said, no, your IRR's lapsed, you've got no right of abode. In my cousin's case, they said she wasn't born here, so she's got no rights. And the Home Office, in the letters, they're saying, well, who did you speak to in 1982, 1983, 1980? Who did you actually speak to? We haven't got any evidence that you went to the British High Commission. It's like a template letter they've sent to all of them. So, yeah.
So they're expecting people to remember who they actually spoke to.
And provide evidence that they went to, yeah. So when I've asked the Home Office, well, do you have records then? And they said, no, they don't. Those would have been FCO records, Foreign and Commonwealth Office, as it was then. And they no longer have those records, but they expect the applicants, the Windrush applicants, to provide that evidence, like who they spoke to, what they said. I'm like, you know, just going around in circles.